Like Dave mentioned, for the last 19 years, my wife and I have served as missionaries with Reach Global, which is the international mission of the Evangelical Free Church of America. So have you ever heard of Trinity Evangelical Divinity School or D.A. Carson or back in the day, Chuck Swindoll? Those are all free church people. We spent the first half of our ministry church planting in northern Spain. And it was a hard, difficult period of our lives in which we learned a ton, but we saw very, very little gospel fruit. Those were years in which I deeply struggled to experience joy. The second half of our ministry has been in Mexico City, Mexico, where we've had a very different ministry experience. In fact, over the last 9 years, the Lord has really given us the privilege to be a part of this growing gospel movement in Mexico City, where churches are being planted and pastors and leaders are being developed and raised up and men and women are being saved. But a few years ago, as I look back on the fruitfulness of our ministry in Mexico, especially in comparison with the lack of fruit in Spain, I discovered something surprising. I was still deeply struggling to experience joy. My lack of joy was not due to the lack of fruit in Spain or to the abundance of fruit in Mexico. It had something to do with me. I struggle to experience joy right now in the present. And I suspect that I'm not the only one. I particularly find that men in their mid-30s to late 40s, people like me, are especially prone to struggle with a lack of joy, with a certain sense of dryness. So I think there's probably a lot of us. I suspect that some of us are in this room right here, right now, struggling with the same thing. And of course, this struggle has been magnified for many of us during this time of quarantine and crisis, right? Or at least for me, my world was reduced to this giant city of 27 million people to essentially my apartment of 1,100 square feet and lots of Zoom meetings. Personally, I knew I was going a little bit crazy when one night I asked my wife, "Do you want to go walk in circles?" And I wasn't joking, because on our rooftop, we could spend our evenings walking and talking and praying, and I counted the steps, 50 steps to do a loop on our rooftop. My world had been reduced to 50 steps. So how do we find joy in this COVID-19 world? Or even more importantly, how do we find joy in this fallen world in which we live? So strangely enough, a few years ago, I was wrestling with this problem. And I happened to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. And I started to find answers in an unexpected place. So this morning, if you would turn with me in your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1. It's right after the book of Proverbs. When people think of the book of Ecclesiastes, if they ever think of the book of Ecclesiastes, they tend to think of it as a dark, cynical, pessimistic book about life. And in a way, that makes sense, because there are two words or phrases that are repeated over and over again in the book of Ecclesiastes. First of all, the word vanity is found 34 times in this book. Secondly, the phrase under the sun is found 24 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. We can actually see how these are used by reading part of the very first chapter of Ecclesiastes. If you're there, look at chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, where it says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? And then he says in chapter 1, verses 8 through 9, he says, all things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. And then he says in chapter 1, verse 14, I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. Let me pray. Father, may you give us eyes to see and hearts ready to respond to the goodness of your word so that we might find joy. And may you use me, this broken vessel, to communicate the good news of the joy that we have in and through you. In Jesus' name, amen. Let me give a little bit of background to this book. The book of Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, who simply calls himself the preacher. He's recognized as one of the wisest men that has ever lived. But he was also a man who pursued and obtained all earthly treasures, amassing massive amounts of wealth and power and respect and far too many women. He gained everything that humans tend to long for, and none of it satisfied him. And much of it led his heart astray into idolatry and despair. Now, we don't know at what point in his life that Solomon wrote this book, but I suspect it was sometime at the end, when he was looking back on his life, and he was realizing how much he had wasted, how fleeting it all was, and how ultimately unsatisfying his pursuits and his power and his wealth had been. And he concludes that everything under the sun is vanity. Now, the word vain or vanity is not necessarily negative. In English, when I hear the word vain or vanity, I tend to think worthless, useless, purposeless, meaningless. But if you have an ESV translation, there's actually a footnote at the bottom that explains more fully what the word vanity actually refers to. Or at least my Bible has the footnote. It's number 2. It says this. The Hebrew term hebel, translated vanity or vain, refers concretely to a mist, vapor, or mere breath, and metaphorically to something that is fleeting or elusive. Something that is fleeting or elusive. So if we understand the word vanity in terms of life being fleeting, like a warm breath on a cold afternoon, I think we're getting closer to what Solomon actually intended for us to understand. In fact, if we replace the word vanity with the word fleeting or something similar, I think it brings greater clarity to what Solomon was trying to get at. And then we have the phrase, under the sun. And this phrase refers to life in a fallen world, life after Eden, where everything has been touched and corrupted by the effects of sin and disease and injustice and death, where too often wickedness goes unpunished and virtue goes unrewarded. One writer has stated that the book of Proverbs explains the normal rules of life, and the book of Ecclesiastes, the many exceptions to those rules. When Solomon uses the phrase under the sun, he's addressing this life right now, right here, as it is really lived, and where things do not always work out the way that they should. One of the things I love about Jesus and the gospel and true Christianity is that it always makes us, in fact, it calls us to look at the world as it really is, in all of its beauty and glory, and also in all of its sickening brokenness. And to not just look at it, but then to enter into it with real, genuine, life-giving hope. You see, our world tries to minimize the fallenness and brokenness that surrounds us. If you look to Eastern religions, they talk about sin and brokenness as an illusion. Suffering is an illusion. It's not even real. In our Western world, we tend to view our problems as a problem of human psychology or of systemic structures. And too many Christians are simply way too satisfied with feel-good bumper sticker theology in the face of real suffering. But King Solomon, just like King Jesus, he takes our world and our pain way more seriously than that. He looks at life under the sun and recognizes it as a corruption of God's original plan for us. A corruption that starts in the human heart and then extends outward, making all of us both victims and aggressors in a broken world, far removed from the paradise it was designed to be. So two themes of Ecclesiastes are vanity and life under the sun. And these themes highlight the fleeting, vaporous nature of life in a fallen world. But there is a third theme that I believe most of us have never seen. It is the theme of joy. It is the theme of joy. The word joy and its synonyms, words like enjoy, enjoyment, rejoice, merry, happy, take pleasure, cheer, they're found about 30 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, almost as many times as the word vanity. And that means we should pay attention to it. I believe one of the primary purposes of this book of Ecclesiastes is to tell us about joy. Solomon does not write this book just to tell us how fleeting life is in this fallen world, but to call us to find joy in the midst of it. So this morning, I would like to help you trace the theme of joy throughout the book of Ecclesiastes so that you and I might find real, lasting, genuine joy right now in this very real, fleeting world in which we live. So get your Bibles ready. We're going to be looking at a variety of passages. I'd like to read a number of them right now. I'd like you to listen in specifically for this theme of joy and see if you see it. In chapter 2, verses 24 through 25, he says this: "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" And then chapter 3, verses 12 through 13. In chapter 3, 12 through 13, he says, "I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man." Then chapter 3, verse 22. In verse 22, he says, "So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot." And then chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. In 5, 18 through 20, he says, "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. For for this is his lot. Everyone else to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Then a little later in chapter 8, verse 15. In chapter 8, verse 15, he says, and I love this phrase, "And I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun." Just a couple more passages. In chapter 9, verses 7 through 10. In chapter 9, verses 7 through 10, he says, "Go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain or fleeting life that he has given you under the sun. Because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going." And finally, in chapter 11, verse 9 through 12:1, he says this in 11:9. "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. For youth and the dawn of life are fleeting. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near of which you will say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" Did you see the theme of joy? Did you hear it? Repeat it over and over and over again. Find enjoyment. Be joyful. Rejoice. I think my favorite is chapter 8:15 when he says, "And I commend joy." I don't think he's being sarcastic. I think he means it. "And I commend joy." So Solomon sees the fallen world. He recognizes the fleetingness of life, but that does not cause him to flee from it, or to become cynical, or to hide in his bunker until Jesus comes back and COVID-19 ends. Instead, it causes him to embrace joy. And did you see where joy is found? Did you notice where it's found? In the midst of a fallen world, this is our first point if you're taking notes. In the midst of a fallen world, we find joy in the daily things of life. In the midst of a fallen world, we find joy in the daily things of life. Now go through these passages again. In chapter 2, verse 24, he says, "So there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil." In chapter 3, verses 12 through 13, again he says, "I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil." In chapter 3, verse 22, he says, "So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work." In chapter 5, verse 18, he says, "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils." In chapter 8, 15, he says, "And I commend joy, For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. Then chapter 9, verse 7, he says, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. And last one, he says in 9:9, enjoy life with the wife whom you love. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love. So we find joy in the midst of a broken world. We find it in the daily things of life. God calls us to find our joy, to find real joy in our food and drink and in our work and in our relationships. That these are good things that are not just meant to be tolerated or not just meant to give us sustenance, but they are meant to be genuine sources of joy. If we have eyes to see them as such, if we don't look past them to try to find something else, to some post-COVID 2021 world, or whatever else you think will really make you happy. God calls you. He calls us to find joy in our food, to enjoy our drink, to enjoy our work, and to enjoy your husband or wife. But how can we enjoy these things in a world filled with death? How can I enjoy my food when I know that people are starving? How can I enjoy my kids when I have so much to get done? Or how can I enjoy my work when it's so monotonous and unfulfilling? That's the real world, right? In the midst of a fallen world, we find joy in the daily things of life. This is our second point. By recognizing them as God's gift to us. By recognizing them as God's gift to us. Let me read a few of these passages again. Chapter 3, verses 12 through 13 says, I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. That is God's gift to man. That is God's gift to man. Then look at chapter 5, verse 18. He says, behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. At the end of chapter 5, verse 19, he says, this is the gift of God. Then chapter 8, verse 15, he says, and I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful. For this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. And then going back one more, chapter 2, verse 24, he says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. And that's really the key. We can enjoy these things because they are God's gift to us. They are from his hand. In fact, without recognizing that they come from God, food and drink and work and relationships will never be a true source of joy. As it says in chapter 2, verse 25, for apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? These things come from his hand. They're his gift to us. Zach Eswine, in his book, Recovering Eden, The Gospel According to Ecclesiastes, which I highly recommend, he states it this way. He says, so it is with our spouses, our food, our work, and our place in the world. Neither of these can satisfy our souls or provide the gain that only God can give. Trying to use them as such will disappoint us. Yet, these creations are God-given and possess divine purpose. A joy resides within them for our notice, and this is by His design. We are meant to taste these joys for which God's gifts were made. This perspective protects us from sinful excess because it tells us that we are always to enjoy our food and our wine and our work and our relationships in light of our Creator, who is both the gift giver and the divine judge. We are to enjoy His gifts, not to abuse His gifts. That's why Solomon warns us, and especially the young among us, to take care with how we live our lives, calling us to enjoy life to the fullest, but to also take seriously that death and judgment will come. In chapter 11, verses 9 through 12, 1, he says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth." 11:9. "And let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. For youth and the dawn of life are vanity. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, 'I have no pleasure in them. My back is killing me. My knees don't work the way they once did.'" So how many of you went to camp? How many of you are wearing your shirts? All right, raise your hand. I don't think God's being sarcastic here. I think He means it. Flex your muscles. Climb that hill. Run fast. Enjoy the energy that God has given you to the max. You will not always have it. It is fleeting, man. It runs from you like a gazelle. It is God's gift to you. Your youth is God's gift to you right now. Use it. But use it in light of your Creator. He is gift giver and He is judge. And then he says, actually, in chapter 12, verse 14, he says, "For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil." Receiving the gifts of God brings joy, but abusing His gifts brings judgment. We have to live both sides of that reality. Biblical Christians tend to rightly emphasize the danger of excess that leads to sin. But I would also warn you to not ignore the danger of failing to receive God's gifts with joy. If you cannot bring yourself to enjoy your food and your drink and your work and your wife and your kids as God's gift, then you are in danger of despising your God and falling into judgment. Wait, what? How is that? It's because the same God who commands you to avoid drunkenness and to avoid sex outside of marriage and to not steal or murder, that same God likewise commands you in 9:7-9 to go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart and enjoy life with the wife whom you love. That means that refusing joy is an explicit rejection of a divine command. And that means that it's sin. And we know that all sin brings judgment. God is commanding you to enjoy His gifts. What a wonderful command. Failing to do so brings judgment. But God calls us to better things. He calls us to joy. So first of all, He calls us to find joy in the daily things of life by recognizing them as God's gift to us. And our final point, by gratefully receiving them as our portion, by gratefully receiving them as our divine portion. There's a phrase in Ecclesiastes that initially sounds negative. It's the phrase, "This is his lot." This is your lot. We find it in chapter 3, verse 22, in chapter 5, verse 18, and in chapter 5, verse 19. This is his lot in life. When I hear, "This is my lot," I tend to understand it as saying, "This is my burden. This is the cross that I must bear." But I don't think that's what Solomon is saying. The word lot has to do with the casting of lots in the ancient world. And in more modern language, it'd be more like saying, "This is the hand that I have been dealt. This is the hand that I have been dealt." In Ecclesiastes, I think we should understand the word lot as a positive reference to the portion that God has given each of us, as the portion he has given us. In fact, Solomon seems to do exactly that in chapter 9, verse 9, where he says in 9:9, "Enjoy life with the wife whom you love, all the days of your fleeting life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life." That is your portion. That is what he has given you. The food that I have today, whether that be a reheated casserole or a fine Wernley steak, that food is a portion that God has given to me today. The job that I have, whether I love it or not, that is the job that God has given to me today. Tomorrow, perhaps things will change. But we can only live in the present. And we can only respond to God in the present. And we can only recognize the portion that he has given to us today, in the present. When I am dissatisfied with my portion, what does my heart tend to do? What does your heart tend to do? It tends to complain, right? And also tends to want what someone else has it. We want their portion because we're not satisfied with our portion. We think what they have is better than what I have. But what's crazy is that doesn't produce joy, does it? All it produces is envy and grief. Solomon talks about this sort of attitude in chapter 4, verse 4, when he says, "Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from envy of one's neighbor. This also is vanity and striving after wind." Do you want to know why you can't have what your neighbor has? Because it is not the portion that God has given you today. But even if you had what your neighbor has, his house, his job, his car, his wife, her husband, their kids, you still wouldn't be satisfied because you still wouldn't be recognizing it as God's portion for you, because you would still be chasing after the wind instead of thanking the wind maker. Zach Eswine states it this way. He says, "God and his joys are found here, within our lot, and not somewhere else. After all, once we get somewhere else, we will have to face the same questions once gainless boredom or restless discontent takes hold of us there too. Sooner or later, whether due to age, sickness, or circumstance, there will be no other place to go, no other work to try, no other wife to leave, and no other menu from which we can order. At some point, we all have to come to terms with the spiritual truth that true joy is found in God. And God is found right where his gifts are. God's gifts are our lot. So how do we find joy in a fallen world? According to God's word, given to us through King Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, we find joy in the daily things of life, recognizing them as God's gift to us and gratefully receiving them as our portion. Okay, sounds good. So what does that look like in practice, right? What does that look like in the real world? Well, let me give you a few of my practical rubber meets the road recommendations, at least to get you thinking. I have four. They've helped me, and I hope they'll help you. First of all, do less. Do less. A few years ago, I found myself completely and utterly burnt out in Mexico City. 9 years ago, when we moved there, I was sent there really to relaunch the entire ministry. And the Lord had blessed our ministry, but my hands were somehow involved in everything because I was the pioneer, I was the leader, I was the initiator. And that blessing that God was giving us became a burden for me because I couldn't bear the weight any longer. It was too much. And do you know why it became a burden for me? Because God had not created me to do everything. That was not my portion. So I had to let things go. I had to recognize my portion, entrust the rest to others, and most of all, entrust it to God. And you know what happened when I did that? Being less busy than I'd ever been in my life, the most fruitful year of ministry I had ever had, and a renewed experience of real joy. I embraced my portion, and God gave me fruitfulness. I embraced my portion, and God gave me joy. So you might need to do less. Second recommendation. Do more. You might need to do a whole lot more with what you've been given. Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might." Christian missionary and martyr Jim Elliot said it this way. It's a phrase that's marked my life. He said, "Wherever you are, be all there." Wherever you are, be all there. Whatever God has given to you, use it to the full. Your heart, your hands, your mind, your tools, your car, your job, your family, your good looks. Whatever it is, use it, man. It comes from God. Stop wasting the gift. Your portion is also your responsibility. For your joy, for the good of our world, and for God's glory. So if you're a barista, make the best coffee that you can. If you're a homemaker, be awesome at it. If you're a businessman, do it well. If you're a teacher, make every lesson rock to your ability. If you're a pastor, serve God with your whole heart. Stand up, get off your tail, and honor God with the portion that he's given you, whether it be a lot or a little. Third recommendation, look closer and remind each other. Pay attention to the incredible gifts that God has given you. Have eyes to see what's right in front of you. Don't look past it. Look closer, and then remind yourself and remind each other over and over and over again. A mentor of mine talks about us gospeling one another. Gospel yourself and gospel one another, reminding yourself and each other that every moment is God's gift. That this moment right now is God's gift. It is His portion for you. Personally, I tend to look past what God has placed right in front of me. I tend to look towards the future, toward a post-COVID-19 world. But when I do that, I fail to see the power and the beauty and the joy of this moment sitting with my wife or playing a game with my kids or preparing for this very sermon. Right now, being in front of all of you is a gift. It is God's portion for me. It is meant to give me joy. And you listen to me right now, you may not feel like it, but it's a gift, all right? It's a gift. Enjoy it. The fact that it will end soon may also be a gift. Enjoy that. But right now we're here in the present. I need to remind myself of that in order to shake myself out of my dissatisfaction and to receive the joy so freely set before me. Fourth practical recommendation. Fear God and keep His commands. Fear God and keep His commands. In chapter 12, verse 13, really the summary of this book, Solomon says, chapter 12, verse 13, "The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Recognizing that God is the giver of these gifts and that there is a judgment to come should shock me out of my complacency and lead me away from the false pleasures of sin and toward the real joy that God is so graciously giving to me. We all live in a fallen, broken world. There's no way to get around that. We are surrounded by death and despair. And to make it all worse, the world we live in is the world that we have created. It is our fault, and we have no excuse. But we also serve a God who has drawn near to us in Jesus, who took time to eat and drink with sinners, who, this is kind of crazy, after rising from the dead and before giving the Great Commission, do you know what He did? He ate fish and talked with His disciples on the shore. Our God knows us for who we really are, and yet He still invites us to His table if we'll turn from our sin, from our false joy and false gods, and believe in His Son, Jesus. Jesus has taken the sting of death away by dying in our place and victoriously rising from the dead, offering all of us new hearts and new lives and new joy in Him. If Solomon could find joy in God's gifts so many years ago, how much more should we be able to find joy in God's greatest gift, in the life and victory and power and love of our resurrected King Jesus? When we enjoy our food and drink and work and relationships as God's gift to us, and especially when we do it in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, when we do that, we are not ignoring the pain and suffering of our world. We are actually declaring to ourselves and to our world that there is an even greater joy that death and sickness can never overcome. As we eat and drink and work with joy, we get to tell our friends and coworkers and each other that this is not the end, that all things will be made right in Jesus, that paradise has not been lost forever. Brothers and sisters, COVID and quarantine will not rule on the final day. And neither will death or fear. In the midst of the uncertainties and brokenness of our present world, whether you live in Emporia, Kansas, or Mexico City, Mexico, whether you have toilet paper or not, whether or not you have to wear a face mask to go shopping, we find joy in the daily things of life, recognizing them as God's gift to us, and gratefully receiving them as our portion. At a personal level, I'd like to finish with this. My time's up. I would ask for your prayers for my family over the next few weeks and months. We have been tremendously blessed by all of you, rescuing us from our apartment after almost 16 weeks of confinement, running freely on the Wernley's Ranch, worshiping and fellowshipping with so many of you, our kids going to camp. But the reality is that in just a few weeks, we're going back to our same little apartment in Mexico City. And we're likely facing, once again, weeks and maybe months of quarantine and isolation. And I'm probably going to have to return back to those 50 steps that I walk on my rooftop. Will you pray that I see them as God's gift to me? And will you pray for our kids, for my wife, that we will have eyes and hearts to find joy in the daily things of life, recognizing them as God's gift to us, and gratefully receiving them as our portion. And so together, we might fulfill our calling to point the world to Jesus as we find our joy in the goodness and grace of our God in Him today.